Mr. David Lee. True Spies starts on BBC Two on Sunday at 9 o'clock. And as we heard there, many of the undercover cops and secret agents acknowledged that theirs was a life based on lies and deception. Betrayal was justified by their belief in a wider sense of moral goodness or rectitude. Similar themes emerged this week in a work of fiction set 800 years ago. Bordellino is a dense, dazzling, fantastic, and infuriating story of a medieval liar told by the Italian author and academic Umberto Eco. Bordellino himself is a traveller who tells his incredible life story to a Byzantine historian as Constantinople, sacked by the Crusaders, burns around them. He says he's the adopted son of Frederick Barbarossa, the Holy Roman Emperor, and has met mythical creatures during a lifetime search for the legendary priest king, Prester John, the supposed author of a real-life historical hoax letter. But then again, Bordellino is a liar. When in his late 40s Umberto Eco started writing his debut novel, The Name of the Rose, he was already recognized as one of the brightest stars of contemporary philosophy and semiotics. His medieval mystery story, in which a succession of monks are murdered in their monastery, sold 10 million copies in 30 languages. When he came to the Front Row studio earlier this afternoon, I started by asking Umberto Eco whether we should regard Bordellino as a medieval companion piece to The Name of the Rose.
No, I don't think so. And as a matter of fact, I started it without thinking of the Middle Ages. I wanted to write a book about contemporary journalists starting a newspaper and inventing fake scoops. Then I realized that the situation was very similar to the one of my Foucault's Pendulum. So I said no. And musing about great fakes, I remember the letter of Prester John that was really written as a forgery in that period, and it was a great fake. And at that point I realized immediately that it would have been very different from The Name of the Rose.
Different in terms of narrative, in terms of structure and conception, but what I thought was that in the way that in The Name of the Rose the theme was about the discovery of truth and the danger of the pursuit of truth, this essentially, this new book is about lying.
Well, that is due to the fact that, okay, I rank as a philosopher, and for us, the problem of truth and lies is an everyday concern. But, well, I am now trying to defend my character, because myself I was guilty in the first interviews when asked who is Baudelaire. He's a liar. Okay, he's a liar. No, he's not a liar, because liars lie about the present and the past. He lies about the future. So he's a constructor of possible worlds in which he too believes. So he's a visionary.
But it makes him sound like a prophet if you say that. In the book, as a character, he's not a prophet. That's you as an author playing games with his character, isn't it? Because you're taking real historical events and having him describe them at a time before they actually happened.
Yes, that was my amusement, obviously.
But your amusement, do you expect us as readers to know that, to have that historical weight of knowledge?
You know, let's say that Baudolino invents 30 big lies. All of them became then real history. I don't expect that the reader is so smart to identify all of those cases. It's enough the readers identify one or two cases and then start suspecting that this is the real story. I make you an example. Baudolino writes the love letters to the empress. They are real love letters written in the Middle Ages, but they have been discovered few decades ago, so they are unknown.
And I have
the satisfaction that only one reader discovered them. He was the German scholar who published the letters for the first time.
And he let you know that he had spotted.
Yeah. And he wrote to me saying, aha, I see that my letters are there. So for an author, it's already enough to have one.
But is it important for even to have one person? What if nobody had said it? Nobody had spotted that conceit?
You know, somebody, many critics have used for my narrative the notion of double coding. A narrative can be read at two different levels. If you discover that the letters come, okay, is an additional pleasure and it is a wink between you and me. If you don't, you appreciate the letters as good love letters and you can enjoy equally. So the author can play upon many winks, like a painter that paints a crowd of people, and he puts inside there the portrait of his friend.
Is there a, I mean, to be very reductive about this, you were once quoted as saying that you wrote the name of the rose in order to murder a monk. Is
that's a joke. I never killed a monk. I am not a sniper. But later I realized that I start a story with a poignant image in my mind. In the case of the name of the rose, was a monk poisoned in a monastery. And all the rest comes by itself. I remember that having finished the name of the rose, I asked myself, but would I be able to write another novel? Maybe it was the only one. And I got two images, the image of the pendulum that I had seen 30 years before, and the image of a young man playing a trumpet in a cemetery. That was an image of my youth. And they said, okay, there are the two images, the beginning and the end. The only problem was how to connect those two images.
And that became Foucault's pendulum.
It costed me 8 years.
Now, most authors would claim that they have the whole novel plotted out, either in their head or on paper, before they start writing. The method of storytelling that you're describing is shared by most parents of young children who sit down by the side of the bed and start telling stories at night and don't often know where that story's going, because the child is saying, and what happens next, and what's happening, what happens
telling,
next.
You are saying something enormously important, because I think that I started writing novels because my kids were grown up too much and I didn't have any longer that experience to start every evening a different chapter of a story without knowing.
Well, I was going to ask you, is that the way that you told stories to your children?
Yes.
Because
I remember that my father was sitting at my bed in order to make me sleep and told me the story of a little bean. And with my children, on the contrary, it was the story of three bears navigating in a balloon through the world and discovering. And what happened to them was what I had read in Homer or in other books. It happened to them, the whole of the world literature. But I was obliged every evening to invent a new chapter.
It's an incredibly complex book, as I've said already. It's a frustrating novel. It's an infuriating novel in many ways. Does that suggest it was very difficult to write?
I made the example of climbing a mountain. Not every moment is so pleasant. Sometimes you are panting. Sometimes you wanted to sit down. And, I had a little superstition that since I finished The Name of the Rose the day of my birthday, I wanted to finish all my novels the day of my birth. And if they were already there in November, I put them in a drawer expecting January the 5th. With Baudolino, I finished the book at the beginning of August and I said, I'm lost. I cannot finish for my birthday. The same night, I got a phone call by my son. I had become a grandfather. And so I discovered that this time it was for the birthday of my grandchild and not for mine.
Umberto Eco, whose new novel Baudolino is published by Secker and Warburg.